Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
And a very good morning to you. It's Friday, February the 27th. Welcome to Africa Link. I'm Mark Caldwell in Bonn, Germany. Coming up, as Ghana's President John Mahama delivers his State of the Nation address, we hear from the leader of the main NPP opposition party on how he would tackle the country's problems.
Management of our economy, proper, efficient, effective management, and the root and branch attack and uprooting of corruption as much as possible.
And there are mixed feelings in Zimbabwe as an estimated sum of $1 million is spent on birthday celebrations for President Robert Mugabe.
We are celebrating the birthday of an icon, not only in Zimbabwe, but in Africa.
To use national resources to celebrate the birthday of a 91-year-old instead of addressing the national problems that this country is facing is upset.
Stay tuned for those stories and more on this edition of Africa Link.
Top story.
Ghana's President John Mahama has been delivering his third State of the Nation address to Parliament. He promised Ghanaians that he would fix their country's energy crisis as well as stabilise the economy. But, as Isaac Kelechi reports, many would like to see such problems tackled sooner rather than later.
It was a much-anticipated State of the Nation address. The lawmaking chamber was full to capacity, and the nation was eager to hear from the president how the government intends to address pressing economic problems and a worsening energy crisis. President John Mahama didn't mince words in his address and accepted the responsibility for current challenges, especially the energy crisis. He promised to fix it by the end of this year.
As leader of this nation, by the grace of God, I more than anyone else understand the adverse impact of this energy shortfall on the growth of our economy. We have been here before. In the past, what we have done has been to manage ourselves out of the situation. I do not intend to manage the situation as has been done in the past. I owe it to the Ghanaian people. I, John Dramani Mahama, will fix this energy challenge.
The president also disclosed that what he described as prudent financial measures were being taken to stabilize the economic situation. Topmost is entering into an agreement with the IMF over a bailout, which will be officially announced this week.
I invite everyone, boy or girl, man or woman, rich or poor, to shed off what divides us and concentrate on the many issues that unite us as a nation. Let's work together to accelerate the progress made so far as we work to transform our country, Ghana. Together, we will build a strong and prosperous Ghana.
But the president's request for support in fixing the numerous challenges confronting the country appeared not to impress his critics. Minority lawmakers were clad in black attire to protest the leadership of the president. Deputy Minority Leader in Ghana's parliament, Dominic Nitiwu, says the president was inflicting much pain on Ghanaians and has given them no reason to hope.
What he has simply come to tell us is a wish list. This road, we are doing that road. That is budget. That's for the Minister of Finance to come and talk about. So for us, there's nothing new. We are totally embarrassed. We are totally surprised. We thought the country was really in deep mourning. That's we're wearing black, nothing else. If you are in mourning, you don't talk. You just keep quiet and listen to the person. Promises, promises, promises. I'll do this, I will do that, I didn't do this. I just think that it's not good for us as a nation.
Kwabena Donkor, the Minister of Power and a senior member of Ghana's parliament, disagrees with his colleague. He says cynicism towards the president's resolve to develop the country isn't good enough. He sought to assure Ghanaians that the crisis will be over soon.
The president spoke about a total solution, not a part solution. We are bringing a solution that includes barges, includes land-mounted equipment, etc. So I'm not talking specifics. Hold me to my word that by the end of this year, load shedding will not only be over, but will ensure that load shedding does not reoccur as it has in the past.
On the streets of Accra, some Ghanaians shared their own assessment of the president's State of the Nation.
I heard the president really speak as a leader of a state. calling for unity, calling for collaborations among all citizenry. I think that we must kind of disown this act of partisanship in our politics.
I really have a lot of reservations. Our major problem, again, has to do with the Nusra crisis. Now, you see a lot of students, basic students, they would have to walk long distance. And I think as a president, you should even call for a state of emergency.
These Ghanaians wait to see how impactful ongoing efforts to address current challenges will be.
Isaac Kalidji reporting, and Adumzor being a popular Ghanaian term for power cuts. Now, among those listening to President Mahama's speech was, of course, the chairman of the main NPP opposition party, Paul Ofuko. I asked him what he made of Mahama's pledge to fix the energy crisis.
What I will say is that the power or energy problems that we face in the country today are just a symptom of a deeper malaise. And that deeper malaise is more to do with proper management of our economy, good governance, and corruption. You see, it's not only the energy sector that is in trouble. It is almost every sector you can think of. So for me, I was more interested in the other measures he was talking about in terms of reviving the economy and getting the economy back online and also fighting corruption. Those were the things that were of interest to me. Energy problems, our collapsing health infrastructure, all of these are just symptoms of a deeper and deeper malaise. Having said that, yes, he outlined for us the stopgap measures that he's going to put in place, like the power budgets and all those things. I welcome it. As a member of the opposition, as a chairman of the largest party, I welcome it. But then, I am doing that with a view to making sure that my compatriots are spared the hardship we are going through at the moment.
Now, Ghana has reached agreement with the International Monetary Fund on a three-year, $1 billion aid package to help it return to fiscal stability. Yeah. Final approval of the package is not expected until April. But what do you make of this deal as it stands at the moment?
Well, I don't know the details, but everybody knows that IMF packages come with conditionalities. I don't know the details. I don't know what those conditionalities are. That's one. I need to see that before I can even hazard a comment. But two, we all know that this $1 billion is not a solution to our problems. After all, we are in the seventh year of an NDC government. And in the 7 years, they have borrowed tens of billions of dollars. And we are where we are. Therefore, I would say that it's most the benefits of that $1 billion may lie in the fact that the IMF World Bank will be exercising supervision over the way the economy is run. Maybe that is where the solution lies and not the $1 billion itself.
So what needs to be done to restore health to Ghana's economy?
As I said, management of our economy, proper, efficient, effective management, and the root and branch attack and uprooting of corruption as much as possible. These two, good governance, these are the things that will bring our economy into shape and keep it in shape, as opposed to the boom and bust, boom and bust.
Paul Ofuko, leader of Ghana's main opposition NPP party.
News, analysis, and feature reports. All that here on Africa Link.
The people of Lesotho will be heading to the polls on Saturday. The small southern African country is staging early elections to restore democratic governance after a coup attempt. The elections will be held amid a heavy regional police presence and be monitored by observer missions. Members of Lesotho's Defence Force have been confined to barracks for the day of the election. Eunice Panjuru prepared this report.
On Saturday, 28 February, the people of Lesotho, or Basotho as they are called, will head to the polls. The elections are being held more than 2 years early in a bid to restore stability following a coup attempt last August that forced Prime Minister Thomas Tabane to briefly seek refuge in South Africa. Dimfo Motsamai, a researcher at South Africa's Institute for Security Studies, ISS, does not see the elections being a solution to the crisis in Lesotho.
These elections are not about bringing a lasting solution to the crisis in Lesotho at all. These elections were a short-term intervention by SADC to restore the country to political normalcy after the governing coalition of the country collapsed. So these elections are really about the restoration of the government.
The polls come earlier than anticipated due to troubles between the coalition government leaders, Prime Minister Thomas Tabane, his deputy Motsejoa Metsing, and Sports Minister Tesele Maseribane. The tiny mountain kingdom of about 2 million residents and surrounded by South Africa last held elections in 2012. There was a peaceful transition of power and the country's first ever coalition was formed, raising hopes of stability. The three-party coalition ran into trouble in June 2014 when Tabane's deputy Metsing announced a vote of no confidence against the premier, who thereafter suspended parliament. Hulu Nyane, the former director of Transformation Resource Center in the capital Maseru, also regards the election as a means of restoring government to the country rather than resolving security issues.
I think the importance of this election is that it's going to resolve a situation of a stalemate in government, because we would recall that since the beginning of 2014, the coalition government has been going through a rough patch where the partners can't agree on almost everything.
South Africa's President Jacob Zuma hosted talks by the regional bloc Southern Africa Development Community, SADC, earlier this month. The talks that were attended by key regional leaders, including Lesotho's Prime Minister Tabane, South Africa's President Zuma, and Zimbabwe's President Robert Mugabe, approved Lesotho's plan to hold a snap election on February 28. The failed coup in August last year highlighted friction between Lesotho's military and the police, with a shootout between soldiers and the Prime Minister's bodyguards killing one person earlier this month. In October 2014, Ramaphosa helped to broker a political agreement that pushed the polls forward. The deal was made in a bid to try to resolve political tensions in the country.
Secondly, SADC appointed the facilitator in the form of Deputy President of the Republic of South Africa to oversee the election processes. So all major decisions in this electoral period have been made by Deputy President of the Republic of South Africa, Cyril Ramaphosa, who is now the facilitator of the conflict situation in Lesotho.
The National Assembly elections in Lesotho will be held under heavy regional police presence. SADC has deployed about 400 police officers from the region to maintain peace. Lesotho's Defence Force will be confined to barracks on the day of election.
Eunice Wanjiru reporting.
Human rights.
And our concern in this week's human rights report is media freedom. Authorities in Cameroon have just shut down a radio programme and five newspapers for what they allege were breaches of media ethics. But media workers say they have become the target of a regime that does not respect the freedom of the press. From Yaoundé, Moki Kinseko reports.
Journalists in Cameroon on Thursday assembled at the National Communication Council, NCC, in Yaoundé to find out why the council that was created as a consultative body has been so hard on media organizations and journalists. The suspended newspapers are La Dépêche, Le Courrier, La Nouvelle, Le Devoir, Le Soir, and a radio program on Amplitude FM, all renowned for being critical of the country's President Paul Biya and his government. One of the disgruntled journalists is Ojong Stephen, editor-in-chief of the media newspaper.
I expected them to play more of an advisory and a consultative role rather than playing the role of the courts. They are going beyond the powers that they are supposed to have.
Various high-ranking officials, including Cameroon's Minister of Special Duties and President Biya's close aide, Atanganji Paul, filed complaints with the National Communication Council, accusing the suspended media houses of not respecting their privacy while investigating corruption cases. But the acting president of the council, Peter Esoka, says they were in no way influenced by President Biya's office.
We are an autonomous body. Yes, we are appointed by the President of the Republic. Yes, but we have a right to use that the authority given to us by the head of state to take certain decisions.
Simon Lyonga, Yaoundé chapter president of Cameroon's English-speaking Journalist Association, says he is worried about the high-handedness of the National Communication Council and its chair, whom he says should only play the role of media regulator.
He has received so much criticism from pressmen. He has suspended so many newspapers. At times he takes decisions according to his heartbeat. If he doesn't like a newspaper, he suspends that paper.
Cameroon's Minister of Communication, Issa Chiruma Bakari, has also issued a warning to journalists whom he says are manipulated by politicians.
Each journalist has to exercise the profession without being a prey that politicians or other people use as a tool.
Reporters Without Borders in its 2014 report said the high number of summons issued and the suspensions was a clear sign that Cameroon's Communication Council had taken a tougher line towards journalists and media.
Marky Kinseka reporting. A week after he turned 91, Africa's most senior leader, President Robert Mugabe of Zimbabwe, is celebrating his birthday this Saturday in the resort town of Victoria Falls. Members of the ruling ZANU-PF party say they have been raising more than $1 million for the event. But this is a controversial affair, not just because elephant meat will be on the menu, to the annoyance of conservationists, but also because of the extravagance in the face of the economic hardships endured by numerous Zimbabwean citizens. Columbus Mafunga reports.
Estimates put cost of President Mugabe's 91st birthday party at $1 million, which is said to have come from private donations. The party will be held at a 5-star hotel on the banks of the majestic Victoria Falls. Tendai Musasa, the chairman of Woodlands Conservance in Victoria Falls, is one of the many Zimbabweans who have donated to ensure that an estimated 20,000 delegates enjoy the birthday bash.
My birthday message to the president will be a very simple one. Wish you many years, many more years. May the God Almighty bless you for the sacrifices that you have made for the generality of Africans and for the generality of Zimbabweans. It is because I'm by and large in part one of those people whose lives have been changed by the life of this man in terms of education and in terms of what I have in terms of assets today. Yes, he is my hero.
The carnival party started last week with several musical performances around the country. On all state radio and television stations, hardly an hour passes before a song or a jingle is played to remind ordinary Zimbabweans about their leader's 91st birthday. In the streets of Harare, there are mixed reactions on whether Mugabe, the only leader Zimbabweans have known since their country's independence from Great Britain in 1980, deserves a lavish party.
This must be done annually because we are celebrating the birthday of an icon, not only in Zimbabwe, but in Africa.
To use national resources to celebrate the birthday of a 91-year-old man whose future lies in the cemetery, instead of addressing the national problems that this country is facing, is upset.
For me, the celebrations are quite wasteful, considering that millions of Zimbabweans are living in abject poverty, and Zimbabweans cannot actually afford a decent meal.
It is clear that those anti-Mugabe birthday sentiments will not yield any results.
Columbus Mavhunga reporting.
Your say.
And this is the point in the programme where we invite you, the listener, to tell us what you think of the stories we've been covering over this past week. Shortly before we went on the air, I was joined in the studio by Abubakar Jalou.
Most of the responses I have on the feedback desk for this week are about the switch from analogue to digital broadcasting.
That's the report we aired about the television blackout in Kenya.
Yes, that's it.
We've been reporting that the United Nations International Telecommunications Union has set June as the deadline for switching from analogue to digital transmissions. Only a few African countries seem prepared for this change. In Kenya, after a consortium of four major television networks refused to change to digital, the government responded by closing them down.
And that report did generate a lot of responses. Prince Bunyayo said, "Tanzania did a great job. Kenya is, however, corrupt, and currently the only media channels broadcasting news are controlled by the president." Ryan Huang wrote, "In my opinion, the ATSC system for digital TV should be used because it is less expensive to convert." Yanis Impame said, "Why is the UN involved in something like this? Is it because analog TV had become the last untraceable media?" And Bruno Philip Resende said, "Why force such measure on countries with so many poor people that can barely afford analog TV? And why is the UN ruling on such an unimportant matter? I know a lot of places here where analog reception was a lot better than after the switch to digital."
Anything else?
Yes, our quiz competition is still ongoing.
And what's the question for this week?
We had a report on a mobile app for the Labola custom in South Africa. Take a listen.
Robert Masaneng's new modern way of calculating Lobola Pride Prize has generated a lot of excitement among South Africans. Lobola, a custom in which the family of a man pays the family of his fiancée for her hand in marriage, has been in existence for centuries. The family of the bride decides how much to demand from the groom in the form of cash or live cows. But the amount paid is different from culture to culture. Matsaneng's app is set to change all that. He says his app is able to calculate how much a woman is worth by just using her physical attributes, educational status, and marital history.
The question is, what do you think of this modern technology with a traditional South African custom? Is it a good idea, a bad idea?
Send us your comment and the best response could win either a T-shirt, a hat, a backpack, necktie, or a USB stick, all with DW's new logo. The first and second runners-up will receive stationery items, writing pads and pins, also with DW's insignia. Don't forget to include your full name, telephone numbers and home address so you can receive your gifts.
And that's all from me.
And many thanks, Abubakar. And remember, if you'd like to contribute to your say, then please send your comments either in an SMS to country code 49 160957 59510, in an email to feedback.africa@dw.de, or in a letter to Africa Link DW 53110 Bonn, Germany. Your say returns next Friday.
For more about Africa Link, go to dw.de/AfricaLink. Find out about Africa Link's partner stations, send us your feedback in a text message, and sign up for our newsletter, dw.de/AfricaLink.
Our main stories. Ghana's President John Mahama has promised to fix his country's energy crisis, saying he understands its impact on the economy. But opposition leader Paul Afoku told this programme the economy needed proper, effective management. And we've also been hearing about the elections in Lesotho on Saturday. There we end this edition of Africa Link. Assumpta Latus will be here on Monday. Do join her if you can. This is Mark Caldwell in Bonn.